All right, welcome to episode 5 of Yinzer Ballin. Craig and Brady here to talk about Super Bowl, Steelers coaching changes, Le'Veon Bell possibly returning to the NFL. But we're going to start off talking about the NFL awards and the fact that Myles Garrett got the Defensive Player of the Year over TJ Watt. Brady, your thoughts?
Dude, I'm still in complete shock. I just don't understand how you could give a guy the defensive player whose stats are significantly worse than TJ Watt's. Like Watt led the league in sacks with 19. He had 26 more tackles than Myles Garrett did. He had more forced fumbles. He had one interception. Garrett didn't even have any. He had one fumble recovery for a touchdown. Garrett didn't have any of that. I think Garrett's only fumble recovery, he got it and got 1 yard out of it. So, and TJ Watt had 8 deflected passes. Garrett had not even close to that much. It's just Watt also had 36 QB hits. Garrett was not even close to that. It's just, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know how they determined Garrett was a better defensive player than TJ Watt this year, because in my eyes, it wasn't even close. Like, Garrett wasn't even top 5 in sacks. He was 8th in sacks this year. There was a whole bunch of guys better than him this year, in my opinion, and he somehow won it over them. I'm still in shock. I think you are too, and I think almost all the NFL fan base is, because I really don't see how he could beat alone TJ Watt or some of the other players like Josh Allen, Danielle Hunter. You know, like those type of guys. I don't know how he's gonna, I don't know how they gave it to him.
So Myles Garrett is a good defensive player. There's no question about that. But it almost feels like this is a lifetime achievement award for him rather than defensive player of the year, where he's been good for 4 or 5 years. The NFL likes a redemption story with him on the arc of being the villain for the whole helmet incident 5 years ago, 4 years ago. It just feels a little bit like this was kind of going into the season from the opening week on. There was this agenda to get him to this award, no matter what the stats showed, no matter what happened. And I've really found it kind of interesting, like how this has all played out, because doing a deeper dive into who votes for these awards, it's pretty telling that there's like 50 journalists who vote for this award. Not one of them is from the Pittsburgh area, which is interesting. When you looked at the people who voted, I think there was something like 8 people in their votes that didn't have TJ Watt in the top 3, which is, I mean, I don't even know how
That
you do that.
that's a crime. That is a crime.
Yeah, right. So that's why he lost, basically. I mean, you know, how you don't have him in the top 3, I don't know how you could possibly justify 3 people being better than him in this year. But the other fascinating part of this to me is, it almost seemed like this was the Brown Super Bowl of hang the banner. We have defensive player of the year. We have comeback player of the year of Joe Flacco over a guy who literally died on the field and then came back. And then you had the coach of the year, which I mean, the Browns had a good year. I don't know that I would have put Kevin Stefanski in the top 3 of
Like Dan
to
Campbell,
me.
D'Amico Ryans were all better than him. All better. And there was a few more coaches I could name too. Like I don't know. It's almost like they rigged it. I don't think they did, but I mean it just seems that way. Like you gotta think that, because there's no way they should have won all these awards.
Well, the other thing is, like, people talk about, you know, Dan Campbell, D'Amico Ryans, which I totally agree with them being above Kevin Stefanski. But what about Kyle Shanahan? I mean, his team had the best record in the entire league. And I know they got a lot of talent, but all I've heard for the last 2 years is so do the Browns, right? So you got all these award winners, and you're an 11-6 team who got shelled in the first week of the wild card. I mean, it just doesn't quite add up to me.
You could put John Harbaugh and Andy Reid in there too. Andy Reid, the Chiefs and Andy Reid started off shaky. Look where they are now. They might win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I
So,
mean, you
yeah.
know, you're right. I mean, you know, even like a Matt LaFleur, right? I mean, like, look at the Packers in the beginning of the season versus the Packers toward the end of the season. I mean, nobody expected them to make the playoffs with Jordan Love.
Yeah. They went from one of the worst teams in the league to a scary team who defeated the Cowboys and almost defeated the 49ers if they would have just made a field goal.
And the argument that people make with Kevin Stefanski about the coach of the year is, well, he was on his third and fourth quarterback, you know, but here's the reality. When they got to Joe Flacco, he was playing better than Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, 100%. Deshaun was horrible this year. It was horrible. I would have taken Joe Flacco 10 times out of 10 over Deshaun this year. And that's just Browns fans' excuses. You know, like they could say they've lost all their quarterbacks, they lost DTR, they lost Deshaun. In reality, Joe Flacco was twice as better as them this year, easily. And I do agree with you with the Myles Garrett thing that at the beginning of the year, they wanted him to win it. Like they were settled out for him to win it because he's had better years than this year. He was better in 2022 stat wise. He was better in 2021 stat wise. And I don't know if it was either 2018 or 2019, but he had similar stats that he has now in those years. And he didn't win it last year. He didn't win it in 2021. Not saying he deserved to win it, but there's no way he deserved to win it this year over guys like TJ Watt or even like Josh Allen or Danielle Hunter. There's no way. It just
Yeah,
still
and
shocks me. It still amazes me.
so this discussion for Defensive Player of the Year takes me to my Jagoff of the Week, who is Micah Parsons, who following the Defensive Player of the Year award went on his podcast and said that TJ Watt wasn't a top five linebacker in
Who
the
who's his
NFL.
top five? Who's his top five? Can you
Yeah, I
say
don't
it?
know. That would be really interesting to find out, but you know, I saw somebody post this on Twitter and it was kind of funny. You know, TJ Watt didn't show up for the awards when he knew he was not going to win. And somebody said that TJ Watt did the same thing that Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons did for the second half of the season.
So he had one sack in the last seven games. That's
Yeah.
incorrect.
Yeah, you're right. Well, no. They said he didn't show up for the event. Like, Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons didn't show up for the last half of the season. So, because they both played significantly worse down the stretch.
Yeah, they both fell off at the end. But TJ Watt didn't though, but he doesn't get the award, so I don't really know, man.
Yeah. So here's the other fascinating part about this is on the other side, Cam Hayward gets the Walter Payton Man of the Award, which very well deserved. Cam Hayward does a lot in the community. You know, stand up guy. You know, always is at the front of fundraisers and community events. So I think very well deserved. And again, you also just wonder, right, if Cam Hayward's been nominated for this award like I think 8 times now. And it almost again feels like a lifetime achievement award, which he has deserved in this case, but call it what it is, because he's done this same stuff for 8 years.
It's one of those where he's a very good player on the field, but he's an even better person off the field. And that's what I really love Cam Hayward for. He does a lot for Pittsburgh and the community. So yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I agree with you. He's deserving it.
Couple of really interesting, as we're talking about the awards, couple of really interesting selections to the Pro Football Hall of Fame that came out this week as well. One of the ones that two I just want to touch on real quick. One of them is Devin Hester, who basically was a return man, M might be one of the best return men in NFL history. But that's really what he was known for, was being a returner. I get why he's there, but I'll also have a really hard time of a player like a Hines Ward not being in over him, who was a complete player, impacted, you know, every offensive play as a wide receiver, was a Super Bowl MVP. It just doesn't kind of fit right with me.
He was a great blocker too for a receiver. Like I think that's what you're trying to say. He was a very good team player. And yeah, he was a big part of their Super Bowl wins. I don't get it either why he's never in like the last like part of the Hall of Fame like voting, because I think he really deserves it. Like if you're giving somebody like that guy in there, I feel like Hines Ward's gotta be in there too. He's just done so much for the Steelers. He's been a phenomenal receiver ever since he was there. I think he'll eventually get in, but he should already be in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be, I think he will get in eventually, but I think, Hines Ward really changed the game in terms of a wide receiver being not just a pass catcher, but a run blocker as well, and somebody who struck fear into defenses for a number of different reasons. And to me, that's the definition of a Hall of Famer. It's somebody who changes the game.
You don't see George Pickens as an example. You don't see any receivers for the Steelers really blocking anymore. Like Hines Ward was really the last guy to kind of do that and be like that good of a team player. You don't see much of that in the NFL anymore. Just like receivers blocking for the runnings. Like you see it sometimes, but like Hines Ward really like changed the game in that way. I feel like he really helped the team out in that way. I don't feel like we see that anymore.
Yeah, one of the other things about that is that when you are such a good run blocker and your team is a run first team, like they were for much of his time with Bettis in the backfield, it's going to affect your receiving stats to some degree, and you're not going to have as many gaudy receiving stats because you're spending your time run blocking. But again, you're influencing the game to the same degree. I mean, if you spring a running back for a 30-yard run, that's just as good to me as a 30-yard reception.
And if you're constantly in the run for the Super Bowl every year, that's better than having 1,000 yards a year, you know? So,
Right. Yeah.
yeah.
The other fascinating snub I thought from the Hall of Fame was Antonio Gates. And, him not getting in as a tight end is just amazing to me because I would put Antonio Gates as one of the top five tight ends in NFL history still at this point.
I would put him up there too. Yeah. You got Kelce, not in any particular order, but you got Kelce, Shannon Sharp, Gronk, Tony Gonzalez, and I'd probably put him up there, maybe five or six. He's definitely up there though. I would definitely put him in the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure why he wasn't in it.
Yeah, I just again, and he did put up pretty good numbers for a tight end for a long period of time. I mean, and longevity wasn't a problem. He was a tremendous athlete. Again, him and Tony Gonzalez for years before Gronk came into the picture, they were the top tight ends in the league, along with Shannon Sharp. Shannon Sharp was kind of on the back end of his career when Gates and Gonzalez were in their prime, but that era kind of revolutionized the tight end because, other than maybe Kellen Winslow Sr., before that, Shannon Sharp, Gonzalez, Gates, you didn't see really prolific pass catching out of tight ends, but they completely changed the game.
Gates was a big reason why Philip Rivers was a great quarterback in his time, because that was like his main man that he would throw to every time. So, yeah, I'm not really sure why they didn't get him in the Hall of Fame there. That's very shocking to me, because he was a phenomenal tight end. I mean, one of the best of all time. It's confusing. I'm not sure the decisions that the NFL are making these days are correct.
Well, it's the voters, right? I mean, and that's the problem. You get people who, get votes on these things who have a clear agenda, or they don't really know the complete picture of football other than their local teams who they happen to follow and are beat reporters for. I saw Mike Florio's ballot for the NFL awards, and as I went through the list, I was like, man, I don't disagree with any of these. I think his picks were, right on par with what I would have picked for almost everybody. But I think Florio, with his job at Pro Football Talk, he has a different perspective because he's following everybody. He's not a local reporter.
Right, he has more football knowledge than anybody else, 'cause that's his job. He just follows that.
So it'll be interesting the next couple of years. I do think Gates and Ward will both get in, but it's interesting that they didn't get in again. And the one person that I was really happy to see get in, and I really hope he is able to make it to see himself get inducted in Canton, is Steve McMichael, former defensive end for the Bears, spent some time in pro wrestling and world championship wrestling during its peak run there in the late 90s. But McMichael was diagnosed a few years ago with ALS and, pretty much can't leave his house now. But truly deserving for him, and really hope he's able to see himself get inducted.
Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Le'Veon Bell. So Le'Veon Bell started putting these cryptic messages out early in the week that he might be trying to come back. He might be trying to play for only one team, and we all know what that team is. And then he started later in the week putting out like some text messages that perhaps he had with the Steelers back and forth. There were some other reports that the interest between the Steelers and him was pretty mutual at this point. What do you think about this in terms of him making a comeback? And this kind of gets us into the Steelers running back situation. Does he fit into the running back room right now?
I think he'd be a very good third running back. He'd be a good third option because obviously you got Najee and Jaylen Warren. They're not going anywhere right now. That's a good 1-2 punch. But I think he could bring some experience to those, like, and help be a leader to Jaylen Warren and Najee, because he'll be a good third running back and he could teach them a lot of stuff that he had. I also just noticed 26 is not one of the Steelers' numbers, so he would get his number back. That'd be very cool. But yeah, I think he'd be a great serviceable third running back. He'd be a good fit for there because he already knows kind of how their offense runs. I know Big Ben isn't there anymore and Antonio Brown's not there, but he has an idea because he's had experience with them. So I think it'd be a great pickup because he's been on the team before, and obviously he's not going to be as phenomenal as he was, or maybe not even close, but he'll be a good serviceable running back. I feel like he'd be a good third option. So I think it's a good idea if we give him a chance again.
Yeah, the other good thing about him at this point, I mean, Le'Veon Bell with his age right now, he's not going to be a workhorse running back at this point in his career, but I think he could be a number three running back where he can give you 5 to 6 carries a game that could end up breaking one. And just take a little bit of pressure off of Warren and Harris. The other thing is he was a phenomenal pass catcher.
He was a good receiving back, yeah.
I think again that, hey, if you can run a couple formations where you put Harris, Warren, Bell, a combination of two of the three in the backfield at the same time, this goes back to what we talked about last week. It gives defenses something else to think about and something else to plan for from a game plan standpoint. And it also gives you a formation where the defense doesn't know exactly what you're going to do before the play happens.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I always said that the downfall of the Steelers started when Le'Veon Bell left to go to the Jets for more money. So, if he does come back, maybe the Steelers will improve a little bit. I'm not saying it's because of him, but maybe because of the culture there and having him back, the fan base might be happier too. Maybe I just think having Le'Veon Bell would be better for the team.
Yeah, I think the other thing is hopefully Le'Veon learned a little math in his time off because that's still one of the dumber decisions in the history of football when he was supposed to make $14 million that year under a franchise tag and decided to instead sit out the rest of the whole season and not make any money. And I was saying at the time, boy, his agent should have been explaining to him that that is $14 million that you're never going to make back. Like you just give up $14 million.
Based on some of the stuff, based on some of the stuff that he said, like throughout the years, I think he really regrets the decision of leaving the Steelers and not taking the money. So I think he'll definitely come back if Tomlin gives him the opportunity in the front office.
I think it's going to come down to him having a physical, them seeing what shape he's in, and going from there. But I do think if they're able to bring him in and be the third running back, it kind of pushes back the need to draft a third running back, which is good because they have other needs to address that are a little bit more pressing this year.
Right, yeah, it'd be nice to get a third running back, but if they get Bell, then they should not worry about getting a running back in the draft because you're right, they do have other needs that they need.
So we finally have some new coaches to help on the offensive side of the football as well. Tom Arth being named the quarterback's coach, Zach Azani being named the wide receiver's coach. So I looking at the history of Arth, right? He's got a pretty strong history with some really good pass offenses, and most recently the San Diego Chargers working with Justin Herbert.
San
But what
Diego.
are Yeah, I said San Diego again, didn't I? Sorry. Los Angeles Chargers working with Justin Herbert. One of the interesting things I saw though in digging into him a little bit was he had a real high recommendation for his last job from Peyton Manning, who said that he was one of the best passing coaches he's ever worked with. And I don't know that it gets much better than that in terms of an endorsement from Peyton Manning for the quarterback position. So I'm really interested to see what he can do in terms of being creative in the passing game, but also what he can do with Kenny Pickett and even perhaps Mason Rudolph, two younger quarterbacks, to help them continue to develop.
I know the Chargers were pretty horrendous this year, but their passing game and their wide receiver game was really good. Like before Herbert got hurt, he had almost 3,200 yards. He had 20 touchdowns, only 7 interceptions. He had almost a 66 completion rating. Like their offense was not bad, and that certainly probably has to do a lot with the passing game with Art. So, I'm excited to see him work with Kenny and Mason Rudolph, because if they can improve, that'll make the Steelers' chances of being a great team drastically improve, because the quarterback position has been one of the main downfalls in the past like 2 years for them. So if he strengthens Pickett and Ru or Rudolph, and they do a better job this year in 2024, that'll be amazing for the team. They will definitely be in playoff contention if they build other like O lines and cornerback and the D line too. But it all starts with the quarterback too. So, I think it's a good pickup. I think that he can teach a lot with them.
And I also think the wide receivers coaches in this case is almost as important as the quarterback coach because somebody needs to come in and lead that room. There's just a little bit of turmoil and, baggage that seems to come out every week. I think that hire is going to be almost as important as the quarterback's coach to just bring some maturity to that room. And I'm not sure that the answer is like going out and bringing a veteran wide receiver in because like we saw this with Allen Robinson this past year, who by all accounts was a good dude in the locker room and was a has been a productive receiver in the past. I'm not sure they need just a presence in the locker room from a player standpoint. They need a legitimate number three wide receiver who can catch the football and get yards. But I think they need accountability from a coaching staff standpoint in that locker room, in that
I
group.
agree with you. Yeah. I don't think Calvin Austin proved that he's a wide receiver three this year either. He'd be a decent four. He's not a wide receiver three though.
Yeah, I think you need to either draft or bring somebody in who's going to be a little bit more of an impact player in that position because again, the NFL has changed and you're not running a, I formation with two tight ends sets very often in the NFL anymore with two backs, two tight ends. You're running a lot of sets where you have three, four, five wide receivers on the field at one time. And you can't go from your two wide receivers, your top two wide receivers being, tier A, and then your bottom three receivers being tier D, right? Like you need some in between there where you have maybe another one or two that are tier B guys who can still get open because that's going to create more opportunities for Pickens and Johnson in the passing game as well if you have other people who are perceived as a threat.
And Freiermuth too. He needs his
Right.
targets too.
Yeah. So I do think that's going to be a need for them. I would not be surprised. We'll talk more about the receivers next time as we get into the wide receiver room, but I wouldn't be surprised if they drafted a wide receiver in the first few rounds of the draft this year.
It wouldn't be a bad pick. I mean, if obviously Arth can do a good job with Pickett and Rudolph, and then they get another receiver who could catch the ball and get open more. I mean, I feel like they'll have a better chance of winning too. So it'll help the offense too. It'll help Pickens and Freiermuth and Johnson get open more.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so this brings us to the topic of the week, which is the Super Bowl. Massive game tomorrow. Chiefs 49ers. I think you got the best two teams like we talked about last time. We didn't do a whole lot of analysis of this game last week, so let's break it down. Where do you think this game goes and why?
I think it's for the Chiefs. I think it's all going to depend on how well they contained Christian McCaffrey, because obviously he's an amazing, phenomenal running back, and even a better, obviously a great receiving back too. He offensive player of the year, you know, and the Chiefs are 27th in the rush defense this year, 27th in the league. So being that bad at the rush defense and the run defense, and having Christian McCaffrey go against you, that's there. I think they're going to struggle with him. And I think that'll also lead to them having to try to contain him more, which will lead to more passes and getting guys open down the field because they're going to be so focused on McCaffrey early on. So I think that'll lead to a lot of 49ers points. But as far as the 49ers go, we know that we've seen that Brock Purdy has kind of struggled and is a little iffy under pressure in big games, right? We saw that kind of last week with the Lions. I know they won, but he still was under pressure sometimes. He was a little iffy. And I think it's going to be for them, defensive-wise, how well they can contain Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice. Because obviously, those are the two big, besides Patrick Mahomes, those are the two big names that Mahomes has given targets to week in and week out. We saw Travis Kelce have a big week last week. A touchdown, 116 yards, and a lot of receptions. And then the first week against the Dolphins, they had Rashee Rice break the Chiefs rookie record in receiving yards in the playoff game. So I really think that for this to happen, the 49ers D line has to apply enough pressure to get to Mahomes so that he can make careless and bad decisions that will cost in turnovers, so that the 49ers get the ball back and they have a better chance of scoring down the field and gain better field possession. So I think that's how the 49ers would win. They have to use Christian McCaffrey a lot, unlike what the Ravens did with Gus Edwards last week. They need to utilize the run defense. They need to utilize the run defense that the Chiefs have because it's poor. And then they need to apply enough pressure to Mahomes while keeping guard of Kelce and Rashee Rice, because that's going to be how they win the game.
As I look at this game, everything about it tells me the 49ers should win. They have, you know, advantages everywhere if you look on paper. The one thing that I keep going back to, though, is they don't have Patrick Mahomes. And I've seen this movie before 7 times. It was called Tom Brady. There's just he has that feel where you got the same sense with Brady that no matter what, they're probably going to win the game. Right? Like, I mean,
Yeah.
in this situation, and I keep going back to that and going back and forth of saying the 49ers to me are the better football team, but they don't have Mahomes, and that gives the Chiefs such an advantage. Having said that, to me, this game ultimately is going to come down to how well the Chiefs can run the football. Because I think if the Chiefs become one-dimensional and they just have to rely only on the passing game, the pass rush is eventually going to get to Mahomes that the 49ers bring. I think if they can stabilize or neutralize that a little bit by being able to run Pacheco, which I think they probably will, I think that's what's going to create the problems for the 49ers on defense, because now you have to decide, what am I going to stop? And when Mahomes is in that situation, as we've seen the last several weeks, he's very effective at being able to just pick you apart down the field, and hit a big play here and there when it becomes open, and being patient enough to do that. So, I think this is going to be a really good football game. I think it's going to be close. At the end of the day, I don't want to pick against Mahomes, but I've done it for the last few weeks. So I'm going to pick the 49ers, knowing that Mahomes is probably going to win.
Yeah, it's really hard not to pick the 49ers because, like you said, I truly believe they are the better football team. I think they have the better all-around football team. They have an amazing running back, a QB who has been an MVP caliber this whole year, basically. They have a solid, very solid defense. Fred Warner, you know, I mean, he's been fantastic. They got Nick Bosa. I will ask, is Debo back this week? Is he back?
Yes, I think he is playing this week, 100%.
Okay, so that does help the 49ers' chances too, because obviously he's great when he plays. So you think the 49ers are going to beat the Chiefs?
I think it's going to be a close game. If I had to pick one, I would pick the 49ers to win by a field goal.
Okay. I think I'm not going to pick against Mahomes. I really want to, but if I do pick the 49ers, I know that Mahomes is going to win. So I'm going to pick Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs to beat the 49ers 27 to 24 by a field goal. Yeah, I really don't want to pick Mahomes, but I think he's going to win. I just don't see how he's going to lose.
My other prediction is the middle of the halftime show, in the middle of Usher's performance, Taylor Swift is going to start singing from the box and they're going to go right to her.
Yeah, I think Jason Kelsey should be the one singing, but that's just me.
Maybe that's a good point. I don't know
Yeah.
I don't know the ratings on that would be quite as high.
Yeah, they'd probably much rather have Taylor Swift for the revenue. Get an extra million in real quick. Yeah, I don't know. I really want the Chiefs to lose. I just don't think they will.
Well, what we'll do is next week we'll recap the Super Bowl, and we're going to get really into a baseball preview next week too, as the Pirates spring training approaches. And we'll get into this and dive into it more next week. But man, it's really frustrating seeing other Major League Baseball teams sign players that we should be able to sign to contracts that are not that unaffordable that will help contribute to their team, and we just continue to do basically nothing. And I follow some of these people on Twitter, and who are really big Pirates fans and supporters and insiders, and you really just kind of come down to they're not really trying to win in a lot of cases. And I think that comes down to the owner. And until they get a new owner, I think the frustration is going to continue to be there.
It's just like he doesn't care anymore. It just looks like that way, and it's frustrating all the fans who have sat here while the franchise has been in poverty for the past like 9 or 10 years. It's just hard, you know. It's rough. I completely agree with them too. I know how it's like to be a Pirates fan. It sucks watching them, and they have these players that have potential, but they could easily have more if their owner would just sign these players to affordable contracts, little by little, who would help the team win. It sucks. I feel really bad for the fans, not just me and you, but for the other Pittsburgh Pirates fans that have suffered for the last 10 years.
Hey, one quick story to close out the podcast for today. Earlier in the week, our Twitter account, which is Yinzer Ballin on Twitter, was followed by Pittsburgh Steeler great Jack Lambert. I think we both kind of were like, wow, oh my God. Jack Lambert, one of the best players in Steeler history, one of the best linebackers in NFL history, had an opportunity when I was in high school to play catch on a baseball field with Jack Lambert, and a tremendous guy. Honored that he follows us. So I just wanted to give that a shout out before we wrapped for today.
Absolutely. When you showed me that he was following us, I didn't believe it at first. I thought it was fake. I actually was in shock.
Yeah, so big shout out to Jack Lambert for following us, and hopefully we get more people out there in the Steeler world who follow us soon. So we'll see you all next week after the Super Bowl is over, and hope it's a good one.